This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. This episode, we are talking to a special guest, Mr. Keith Martin, or is it Professor Keith Martin?
Keith Martin's fine.
And you are at Appalachian State College, which is, where is that located?
It's Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina, beautiful Blue Ridge Mountain.
And you have been there about a year as what? What is your position?
Two years. I'm the John Blackburn Distinguished Professor of Theater.
There you go. So it is professor.
If you think of theater showbiz, I teach the biz.
You teach the biz part of it. Well, that's
culture
perfect.
Policy, arts administration, theater management, and the like.
That's great. We got to know Keith via the festival circuit, so to speak, a couple of years ago when we were it was down in Kokomo, Indiana, at the Indiana State Festival, and then also reconnected recently at the Nationals. And you've been an adjudicator for quite a few years at the festivals.
I'm in my fourth decade of doing this. Is that scary?
Wow! Ever get tired of it, Keith?
No, I don't. I mean, the work keeps me invigorated and excited. It's always great. I mean, they're paying me to see theater.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
How cool is that?
That's right. Has the quality changed over the years? Does it vary? Or I mean, what's your general impression of the trend over 40 years?
I think that the quality has improved, especially in the secondary school and the college university sectors. I think the community theater has always been consistently high because that's where avocational artists go to practice their craft. You do see trends from year to year. You see shows. You know, there are about 10 shows I've ever seen again, I'm just going to put a gun to my head.
Right, yeah. So right.
I won't say what any of those are.
We've probably done at least two of them. So yeah.
I'll look at your website right now.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
But the work is always good. What has improved dramatically, no pun intended, is the technical support, the level of production that accompanies the show. Some of the best shows I've seen have done a couple of chairs. But I have to tell you, now and more we're seeing professional design that is executed on a level on par with anything I see anywhere. That's extraordinary.
Wow. That's good to hear. I guess that community theaters are doing that well in general.
So, correct.
Yeah. We wanted to talk to you about today about community support, since that's kind of your bailiwick. Well, it is your bailiwick, and as you shared with us a few minutes ago, you're getting ready to speak on the same topic, which is getting community support and in-kind contributions. Theaters often think in terms of getting money, but there are a lot of other ways that communities can support a community theater.
Well, we can start with the festival. I know that my colleagues on the line are active with the Elkhart Theater, which was very well represented at this most recent festival with the production of, what was it, Jekyll and Hyde, I believe.
Right, yeah.
And after the festival's over, I had occasion to be able to send a little letter to the editor, to your local media, because you're never a prophet in your own land. And it was my hope that letter can be used by the good folks there to say, hey, you know, we're pretty good. And we're not just saying it ourselves. Here's somebody else who thinks so, too.
Yes, your letter did a lot of good for us, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
So we were very grateful for that. I think I sent you an email on that, but that was, very, very, very grateful for that.
But the second thing is trying to do things in a collective manner within the theater community to show that you're a unified field. I'll give you two examples. When I was in Richmond, Virginia, where I lived for 8 years prior to relocating back to my home state of North Carolina, we came up with a BHAG, a big, hairy, aggressive goal that would shed light on the arts. You've never heard that?
I've never heard that.
Big, audacious, big, hairy, aggressive goal.
No.
But we wanted to create a project that was big enough for every theater, every arts organization, the entire Commonwealth of Virginia, to be able to do at the same time on an equal basis. The smallest community theater on the Eastern Shore could compete on a level field with the Tony Award-winning Signature Theater in Arlington or the Barter Theater in Abingdon, Virginia. And we came up with a statewide celebration entitled Minds Wide Open, Virginia Celebrates Women in the Arts. And it just grew like Topsy, because from March to June of 2010, we all did plays by women playwrights. Symphonies had brought in female conductors and did works by female composers. Visual arts, it just exploded. It was a huge success. We were hoping to have maybe 100 events. We ended up with 10,123 individual performances or exhibitions.
Wow.
That is by 324 different cultural organizations and like over 400 different locations. And the thing is that it shed light on the impact that the arts can have. And concurrent with this effort was a unfortunate bill in the General Assembly to try to reduce arts funding. And because of the visibility that the arts had during that period of time, which coincided with the General Assembly session, the arts were maintained and were not cut. We're doing something similar here this year, where I am now in Boone, North Carolina, with a group called the High Country Theater League. And next, April 23rd, is William Shakespeare's 450th birthday. And so all of us are doing different plays from the canon of Shakespearean works. And so we're doing a High Country Shakespeare celebration. I'm directing Kiss Me Kate with the School of Music. Our department is doing Love, Labor's Lost. The high school is doing West Side Story. I can't tell you how many I Hate Hamlets and Midsummer Night's Dreams and Rosencrantz and Guildensterns are dead.
Oh,
but here's the thing. You're raising visibility. You are branding theater as a viable entity in your community. You're showing that we not only do we play well together, pun intended, we work hard, we collaborate. Theater's the definitive collaborative art form. But where we don't extend that is outside our own theaters to partnering with other organizations in our communities.
So, yeah. And now, do you find events to be the strongest way to do this or to extend your reach, or is it, big events like what you're talking about?
Well, this isn't exactly a big event. I mean, Boone's a relatively small community, but what it is doing is getting crossover promotion and crossover audiences. When an audience goes to see the high school's production of West Side Story and may not have set foot on campus before, that's success. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what their point of entry is. Good theater begets good theater begets good theater. If they see our production of Kiss Me Kate and have a great time, they're going to see in our program that there are dozens of other Shakespeare events that tie to the 450th anniversary of his birth, and they're going to seek it out. That's the crossover. We can help each other and at the same time help ourselves, our theater, and our productions.
Okay. I think that is a marvelous idea. I have one question. What do you do when most of the other organizations have no desire to cooperate?
Then the collaboration exists between those who are playing well together.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be for everybody. There's some summer theaters who can't participate on April 23rd. By the way, we're going to do a High Country Shakespeare Bard birthday bash. You know, that's fine. They can still come to that. You know, on April 23rd is like 3 days after Easter in 2014 because of the way the calendar falls. And it's on a Wednesday night. So we're going to do a birthday bash together. But it's okay. Not everyone is going to participate in every project. The world is run by those who show up.
That's true.
It's true.
Do you think that the partnering necessarily has to be done with other arts organizations, or can that be done with other not-for-profits in the community as well?
I think it's stronger when it's done with other not-for-profits. Look at the English classes and the literature classes and the history classes that are going to be participating in this project. With Minds Wide Open, it started out as an initiative in the performing arts. Yet we had 254 exhibits in the visual and media arts. We had 37 literary art events. That's in addition to almost 400 performing arts events as part of Minds Wide Open, Virginia Celebrates Women in the Arts. It's the crossover where we're strongest. And you can take this anyway. One of the plays I'm dying to do is Steve Martin's Picasso with the La Panagia.
Oh, yeah.
And we've going to bring in Steve Martin and the Steep Canyon Rangers as part of our performing arts series.
We're
going to get our Visual Arts Center to get the Picasso pieces on loan from the North Carolina Museum of Art. And we're going to do it all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
It's the crossovers. We're going to get the people who love Steve Martin and Steep Canyon Rangers and that type of music coming to see a play that he himself wrote. we're going to get to see a Picasso exhibit, which, as you know, Picasso, La Panagia, you know, the whole meeting with Einstein, et cetera. It's the kind of crossover things where if we can just extend our collaborative project outside of our rehearsal studios and our individual theaters, mm-hmm. instead of looking at the mirror, we need to look out the window a little bit more order to have maximum impact.
Okay, these are obviously things, though, that you can't just decide on the spur of the moment that you're going to do them.
What are you trying to say? We don't plan in advance in the theater community?
Okay. Well,
that
I don't
is true.
Know.
But I have to tell you, we formed the High Country Theater League when I got here 2 years ago, and it's taken us 2 years to think of something big enough that we can all participate in on an equal basis.
Okay.
So it does advance planning. And women in the arts begat children in the arts 2 years later. So it's the kind of thing where you just jump in. You can't beat yourself up because you haven't thought about this before. You just start anew and plan for the future.
Do you find that the theater itself or, you know, the sponsoring organization needs an awfully good salesperson kind of helming the thing to get things going? I mean, I know you well enough to believe that you personally are probably a pretty good salesperson for these kinds of things.
I have yet to meet a theater person who isn't a shameless marketing whore. We all are. That's how we put butts in seats. But it extends to the hospitality industry. You know, hotels want to put heads in beds.
Right.
So we're partnering with the Hotel Association to a bed and bard. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
Bed and bard. When you're coming to the High Country to take advantage of the Shakespeare celebration, we can give you a preferred hotel at a very good rate. Bed and bard. And I won't even talk about the restaurant packages we're having. Mm-hmm. We don't have enough time.
Yeah.
But again, it's thinking outside. The box. That sounds cliche, but it is looking out the window instead of just in the mirror. And we haven't even talked about in-kind contributions yet.
Yeah. So what about in-kind contributions? How do you approach? What give us some good examples there?
Well, I think lots of examples. But keep in mind, you know, I'm now in my sixth recession as a manager of a theater. Six. Mm-hmm. I go back to the gasoline wars of the 1970s. Remember, even on...
Yeah, I remember we were in the trenches back then.
Exactly right. You know, if you had an even-numbered license plate, you gassed up on even-numbered days. If you had an odd-number days, et cetera, et cetera. The thing that concerns me is we have so many first-generation arts managers who have yet to weather recession, so they don't know how to tighten their belt.
Right. Yeah.
And I think the answer to surviving recession is in-kind donations. Whenever an arts organization, be it theater or whatever, is in trouble, they're trying to balance their budget in one of two ways, raising more money or cutting expenses. And it really doesn't work because they're not mm-hmm. looking outside of their budget for solutions.
Right. And the answer and the question, when an outside solution comes along, very often the answer is, well, we don't have the money right now to do that.
So
it's like that vicious
donations.
Circle. Right, yeah.
An in-kind donation is any contribution of services, equipment, materials, or facilities. And it really has become kind of an underground economy. You start by looking at all your canceled checks for the last 3 years. You classify them by category, throw out artist expenses, but you can look at personnel. And then you start with your largest ticket items. Travel and accommodations are relatively easy to get.
Mm-hmm.
Printing, equipment, facilities, parking, operating expenses, airfare. I mean, I have a list of in-kind contributors when I left Charlotte Rep and went to Richmond and also Richmond Ballet that numbers in the hundreds.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get airfares? You get United Airlines to give you a ticket? Because if somebody buys you a ticket, then that's just a donation, right? I mean,
there are two ways. You mm-hmm. go to the book of lists that's put together by Business Journal called bizbooks.com. And I looked in the Charlotte region to see who had the largest local travel agency.
Uh-huh.
Then I looked to see who used the most tickets, and it was a local bank. So I took the head of travel and transportation for the bank and the head of the largest local travel agency, and we went to meet with the regional representative of a major airline. They weren't looking at this, you know, cute bald guy in the middle. They're looking at the largest client and the largest travel agency.
Uh-huh.
And we walked out of the meeting with 50 vouchers, good for round-trip airline travel. People give to people, not to organizations. They do in return for favors. And when both those folks said, this is a theater in which we believe quite strongly, they need some help transporting artists, going mm-hmm. to auditions, going to festivals, bringing in playwrights, designers, writers, etc. They can't say no if the right people are doing the asking.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, what did you have to provide in return for say, those plane tickets? Normally, just continue being as beautiful as you are?
Oh, gosh, we have met. The first, what do we give them in return? The first is a tax credit letter for the full value of their donation.
Okay.
We also give them tickets and or corporate night. We in the theater call it final dress. They call it an invitational sneak preview.
Mm-hmm.
We may call it a brush-up rehearsal or, you know, matinee. They call it a special corporate performance.
Right.
You know, recognition is the key.
Recognition,
but again, they're doing
it
for altruistic purposes. Keep in mind, we're in a recession.
Sure.
Many organizations welcome any alternative to writing a check. If they have airline seats, that's what they can give. If they have space, that's what they can give. If they have rental cars or cargo vans, they can. Everyone can give in their own way.
Yeah. Well, I think anyone, and I don't mean to flog festival, but I mean I know that that's what happens for a lot of the organizations that compete. They sort of discover the in-kind donation when they really need the money,
yeah.
But not at necessarily at other times. And we had lodging donated to us, essentially, and it was a wonderful donation. And we had a truck transportation donated to us, which was another great donation. And we had money as well, but you know that's it. It's Sometimes desperation breeds creativity in this area, doesn't it?
Well, and don't take no for an answer. If you can't get it given to you or getting it at cost, go elsewhere.
Okay. I mean, I think it's a great idea. It'll just take a little prodding to get it put into practice around here.
Well, at our theater, it is. It's kind of a perennial problem. But John is our artistic director. You do approach a lot of this.
I try, but, you know, and we talk, and actually I spoke with Keith about this when we had the seminar a couple of years ago, but just it's difficult when you're a single person in an office, which I basically am, trying to figure out how to find all the time, and that's when you start trying to rely more on your volunteers.
Right.
So,
but also keep in mind that the number of zeros may be different, but the philosophy applies across the board.
Right.
You may
not
need hundreds of thousands of in-kind contributions, but you're right about leveraging your volunteers. I helped a high school that won their state play festival go on to the regional and then on to the nationals, and we started by finding out where the parents worked of every kid in the school, where the grandparents worked, both parents. And we found out we had some foundation executives, we had a corporate giving officer, somebody worked for a trucking company. It was almost too easy.
It does sound, though, like that planning is, like, key. I mean, really, that we need to get out. Sometimes in community theater, I think we only plan for the moment, and we don't plan ahead as much as we should. We may plan our seasons ahead, but we don't necessarily think about financial planning ahead.
Correct. But also, you're using a new model of philanthropy. The old model would be, John has money, Keith needs money, give it to me. The new model is, John, this is what you believe in. You believe in the arts. You believe in theater. You believe in children. You believe in education. So do I. Here's a project that can help you fulfill your strategic priorities by supporting this project at this theater at this point in time. They can't say no if you cultivate that relationship based on shared values.
Shared objectives.
Exactly right. The outcome is the same.
Do you find that not enough community theaters, you mentioned the BHAG, which is a great, great term. Do you think that a lot of theaters don't think big and they tend to think small, too small, in terms of their objectives and what they really think they can get and what they
in
the projects?
I think they're capable of thinking big. I think they're capable of thinking further in advance. It's just a matter of breaking the crisis management mode.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and thinking beyond, again, I can argue both sides of this. I think anyone that has a 5-year strategic plan is only kidding themselves.
Yeah.
Because you cannot predict the social, the political, the economic environment more than 18 to 24 months in advance. I prefer to have a base year, then you have a transition year to the third year, which is a new reality. And then the next year becomes your base year, and the year after that becomes your new transition year. So you're always planning.
So you...
I'm sorry.
But you do still have long-term goals like what, new theater, you know, replace some, you know, some major projects that may take longer.
Endowment, cash reserve,
right.
You know, those kind of things. Those are long-term. But again, the pressure by having short, medium, long-term goals is immense. Hmm. If you just have goals, you know, that is kind of like a rolling strategic plan, you take that pressure off the institution.
Right. How do you find board members that will be that will support this kind of thing on a regular basis? And I, you know, okay, you're laughing.
I'm laughing.
I'm laughing inside, although I'm crying on the outside.
And that's one issue that you run into, especially I think in community theaters is very often board members are there for the name only or for the, you know, to have it on their resume or something, but there's not a lot of activity going on, and it falls back on the I guess, for lack of a better word, rank and file volunteers. What the recruiting of board members is another kind of issue, isn't it?
It is, but I have a board job description that we give them, and it says specifically you have to be involved actively in the identification of, solicitation of, human and financial resources needed to help the organization meet its strategic objectives and goals. If someone says, that's a mouthful, can you simplify it? Yes, your job is to approve policy, raise money, and raise more money. Any questions?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, subtle I'm not, but you should know that. You know? Right. I come from the theater world. I have no shame. And I'm Episcopalian. I don't do guilt. It's a great skill set to have in managing and running an arts organization.
Right. Any questions, John?
No, Dave. I'm such a listener. It's not funny. I always have been. That's part
and
of
he's
my.
He's taking notes.
I'm
too.
Taking notes, Keith. Yes.
Wait, aren't we recording this for Broadcast?
We are. Yeah. You don't need to take notes, John.
I still take notes, but no, I'm just always. It always sounds easy when I hear you talk about it.
I think it sounds logical more than easy. I wouldn't say any of that.
Maybe
is
that's
easy.
What it is.
It's logical. The problem is you get to dealing with the human element, and what do you do when you hand your board members this wonderful list of their duties or whatever, and they just kind of take it home and put it under the cat litter? You know, I mean,
well,
then what do you do?
How to do it. You have them walk through. I mean, I'll give you. Let's just
yeah,
do
please.
One example.
Okay. Okay.
Say you're planning, or it's already 2013, so your 13-14 season is set.
Right.
But let's look ahead to 14-15. What very famous American playwright has the centennial of his birth on October 17th of 2015?
Okay, this is a quiz. I fail.
The answer is Arthur Miller.
Oh, Miller. Okay. Oh, Lord.
Arthur Miller.
Don't
All
tell
My
us
Sons,
to do
Death of a Salesman,
don't
Crucible,
tell us
View
to
from
do
the Bridge.
Death of a Salesman.
I mean,
oh, God.
Show the Misfits. If community theaters could say, hey, guys, just a heads up, the centennial of the birth of Arthur Asher Miller is in 2015. You could do an entire season of that.
Sure.
If you just kind of just Google, you know, what plays were popular 25 years ago, 50 years ago,
well,
75
that, okay.
years ago.
I'll buy that rather than doing a season of Arthur Miller.
No, not a season of Arthur Miller. The suicide rate would just.
Yeah, it would. It would. And our seats would be terribly empty.
But it would be a nice hook.
Sure.
It would be something
yeah,
that
would.
Could anchor
You're
your
right.
season.
Well, but you could also look outside the box. Let's look outside the box.
A good job.
Who did Arthur Miller date?
And Marilyn Monroe.
Well, why not do something like
Bus Stop?
Or
who's his daughter married to?
Oh, I should know that.
Well, a well-known author is always an asset.
Right,
right. No substitute for quality. But keep in mind, timeliness supplies a fitness which might not otherwise exist. But that's an example I'll tee up is how you as a staff person can lead your board. You know, it's like Dorothy Parker said, you can lead a horticulture, but you can't make her think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Lord.
The Love same thing with Parker. Your board. Tee up Arthur Miller. Do you know what happens the next year? Or the year after that? Or the year after that? I do, but I'm not telling. Because it gives me a competitive advantage on my peers who are in a crisis management mode.
Right.
We came up with a Shakespeare celebration 2 years ago. But it just makes us look like we have our poop in a group.
Yep.
That's important. That's
it
important.
It is important.
All right. We're going to start, obviously, thinking about this stuff.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it's great because we're right now.
And I think it's very, very interesting and probably doable if we go at it the right way.
That's true. So now you've inspired us for our home theater, but I hope that we've also inspired any of the myriad listeners out there as well with ways to, you know, get more community support in all kinds of ways.
I mean, I came back from that series with Keith thinking more and more about, especially about in-kind contribution and just how to think outside that box, because you were great at that, Keith. So I hope that what you've talked about today will inspire other community theaters to maybe think outside that box.
That's great.
But also to leverage their entire organization.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stop with your board. Do you know where all of your patrons work? Do you know their place of business? Have you taken the time and effort to find out who they are, where they're from, and how they can help, especially in non-cash gifts? Have you made an appeal at curtain speeches? Hey, folks, we're looking for this, that, or the other. Have you put a wish list in your playbill saying we're in need of the following?
Yeah, we have done that in the past, but not not as often as we should.
Yeah, but you know, there's nothing that succeeds like face-to-face. You know, people can read their program and throw it away, and they we remember you needed a copier or something.
If you're sitting across the desk, it's usually going to be better, I would think.
That is true.
Yeah.
But again, face-to-face, all I need one of my board members or trustees or volunteers to do is get me in the door.
Right.
I'll make the pitch. I'll close the deal.
Wow.
But it's them leveraging their Rolodexes on behalf of the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in a non-cash way. It doesn't cost them anything
right. To
make an introduction.
Yeah,
right.
And that appeals to them, I'm sure, more than writing a check.
That's right.
And recognition is the key. You want to give a shout-out to John. He put us in touch with so-and-so, and guess what they're doing for our theater.
Okay.
Yeah.
Make sure when they're in the theater, the audience knows that they're there.
Yes, yes,
right.
You're so right.
That's true.
Yep.
Recognition is the key.
We all know that because our egos are all appreciably larger than they should be probably, but, right. You know, that's what gets them.
So what's next for you? Are you heading for you're going to give this same lecture that you just gave us later on today, right?
More specific. It's going to be geared to secondary school teachers.
I see.
Continuing education units, et cetera. But my next big project is there's a beautiful 1938 vaudeville theater right here on King Street in Boone.
Wow.
And the town of Boone bought it in receivership from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And we're presenting them a big golf tournament-sized check tomorrow night to repay the town of Boone. And then we're raising the money to renovate it into about a 750-seat performing arts center. There is no public performing arts venue in this region. Mm-hmm. They're all owned by the university.
Wow.
And so if you're at the Blue Ridge Community Theater or Mountain Home Music, et cetera, you are relying on the kindness of strangers. But the dates that are available aren't the dates you always want to have.
Right.
So hopefully by 2015, we'll have an independent, not-for-profit performing arts center for local organizations that we can also present or do what I call gap programming film series or something. Well,
that's a whole nother, because we have a local theater that's also trying to do that same thing, but that's a whole nother discussion that we could talk with you about how you go about doing that and if your community is willing to support it and if your town is going to be a part of that. Is the city itself of Boone going to take any kind of monetary?
The town of Boone fronted the money to buy it from the bank in receivership. We have now raised enough money in advance, cash and pledges, to reimburse the town of Boone.
Wow.
To go completely private.
And right now we're in the private phase of our fundraising campaign.
Yeah.
And we'll go public when we're about two-thirds, three-quarters of the way to our goal. And 2015, we'll do a radio, we'll do this interview live from the Appalachian Theater of the High Country.
Yeah.
How large a town is Boone, not counting the university?
Let's see. It's under 20,000.
And then the university.
Keep in mind that our tourist industry
is massive. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. So you have a massive tourist industry.
The leaf
as well.
Season. I mean, the town quadruples in size on a home football game day.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. I mean, it does say that you don't have to be a huge metropolis, with a standing population all the time to make these kinds of things happen.
Right. I think our current population is like 17,750 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
We're the only town in America where two-thirds of our population goes home for Christmas.
Right.
It's a university town.
Yeah. That's the university thing. Okay. So that's your big project. And then
moving. We just closed on the sale of our house in Richmond, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So we're buying a house here in Boone and be relocating. So that's how I spent my summer vacation is moving.
Now you were with the Richmond Ballet previously, right?
Correct. For 8 years. And prior to that, taught at Davidson College and, was at Charlotte Repertory Theater for over a dozen years.
Wow.
So, but it's taking you a little...
Adjudicating all the while.
Adjudicating all the while, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, but I have to understand, one thing I will say, we haven't talked about the National Festival, but there wasn't a single play there that didn't deserve to be there.
Well, that's nice to know.
Yeah.
I think all of them had redeeming merits. And some are very, very small community theaters with all volunteer staffs who are staying four to a room. And some are from very large multi-million-dollar budget theaters, who consistently appear on a national stage.
Yeah.
But I also think, the fact that the top tier awards went to a large, medium, and a small theater. And, one of them was entering their very first festival ever.
Right.
And made it all the way to the Nationals.
Right.
Maybe we'll talk about this more with your friends from San Remo French, but I applaud the fact that there was an original play that made it all the way to the National Festival.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting mix of things, and it's very hard to I would imagine for an adjudicator to wrap your head around the different genres.
Yeah, sometime
I would like to
have us talk to him about just about that.
Okay.
How do you judge apples and oranges?
That's right. That's right.
That's for another day.
Well, yeah, we need to wrap this particular episode up, and so we just want to thank you. We've been talking to Keith Martin, who is the John M. Blackburn Distinguished Professor of Theater. I actually have it in front of me now, Keith, at Appalachian State University, and really appreciate you being with us, and we hope we get a chance to do this again. Remember, folks, to stop by the website and check out our store, where we can buy
You can buy a lot of stuff, Keith. You can get great coffee mugs.
Okay, yes.
Teddy bears.
Yes, it's theatergeeks.com/store. What about the coffee mugs, Marcia?
They're wonderful.
They're wonderful. Okay.
Yes, I use mine every day.
That's
I give a lot of them for gifts.
That's true.
They make really nice gifts.
Yes, true.
There's some nice looking coffee cups.
As does the teddy bear with the Theater Geeks t-shirt
love
on
the
it,
teddy
right?
Bear.
That's
yes.
true. Okay. And so there is what else?
No, I'm not going to talk.
Rhymes with teddy bear.
No.
Yeah, no.
Please,
no.
John, you got to say it.
Underwear.
Okay, thank you. At the Theater Geeks store. That's right.
You buy underwear from a theater place?
I don't know, because you're a show off. I have no idea
what
that would be. There you go.
That's dangerous.
Anyway, so do that. You can also listen to us at the website, theatergeeks.com, also on iTunes, Stitcher, on-demand radio. It used to be called Smart Radio. And we are also on the Blueberry Network and TuneIn Radio and a whole lot of other places online
where
you can find us. We're just all over the place. That's right. And I should also mention something else. I don't know if I mentioned in a previous episode. We were featured on iTunes for about 2 weeks.
Really?
As part of like a whole thing. I think it was because it was Tony season. They said celebrating theater, and we were the first podcast listed in there. And let me tell you, people were listening to us for about 2 weeks.
How
really
are we
hard
that work
and
for us?
That's scary.
That's right,
right, Keith? How are we going to make that work for us, right?
That's right. Yeah, we got to do that. Anyway, it's already working for us anyhow. So thanks again to Keith Martin for joining us. That's all from us. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Chope.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
There we go.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.